The following program was produced by Clock Tower Radio, clocktower.org, and is broadcast in partnership with Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM.
Coming up next, the music of Shelley Hirsch from her exotic CD, The Far In, Far Out Worlds of Shelley Hirsch. And now, Shelley Hirsch.
Mohammed and his tinkling brethren rubbed themselves briskly with huckabuck towels and invited me to take coffee with them in their mobile home, an unexpected gesture of hospitality I attributed to an appreciation of the enthusiasm I had often expressed for their work. The storm had already risen to a tempest, and we sprinted to their van through sheets of rain. Lightning struck, and all nine in their heliogabalian finery flared briefly like magnesium, reflecting a glare so harsh and violent it wounded the retina. And the rain obscured them again. At first, the landscape looked like that of any other tropical forest. The lease in itself was marvelous enough to me. Nothing I had seen in the low-lying, poorly forested temperate zones that bore me had prepared me for the supernal and tremendous energy of the rearing colonnades in an interwoven roof of limbs and lianas high above our heads. I would have experienced a green panic there among those giant forms far older than even my antique race if Albertina had not walked beside me picking us a safe path as delicately as a cat through undergrowth where strange flesh-eating flowers writhed as if in perturbed slumber. For this forest was also cannibal and full of perils. The leaves let through only a greenish dazzle, and a lonely silence pressed against our ears like fur, for the trees grew too close together for birds to fly or sing. Night had completed itself, and lesser lights, eyes of snakes and effluvia of fireflies, spangled the black velvet surfaces around us. But the eyes of Albertina shone continuously like unquenchable suns. Her eyes were the shape of tears laid on their sides. Sections of Arabs. They reflected those reflections too, so the men were infinitely repeated everywhere I looked, and now 18, and sometimes 27, and at one time 36 brilliant eyes were fixed on me with an intensity which varied according to the distance between the image of their eyes and their originals. I was surrounded by eyes. I was Saint Sebastian, stuck through with the visible barbed beams from brown translucent eyes which spun a web of fine shining threads on the air like threads of candified sugar. I was surrounded by eyes.
Silent all. Hey da, hey da, hey da, hey da. Aida, Aida, Aida.
Ada Vidzer was my best friend. She and her family lived in Montreal till she was three, and then they moved to Brazil. She and her Russian father, Jakob, and her Polish mother, Bessie, moved to Brazil.
From what I understand, it was an arranged marriage.
Lived in Brazil for 7 years, in the jungle of Brazil for 7 years.
Well, it wasn't far from a jungle, but it wasn't like in the Amazon, you know, like right there in the Amazon. Yeah.
She had a little brother, Fivola, who was Bessie's little angel. Bessie believed in angels and devils. Well, not angels with harps and gowns and gossamer wings. She believed in magic.
Instead of playing cards, you know, like here, you know, the mothers or father would go somewhere, play cards. There you go to a seance.
Bessie knew a witch in Brazil.
She would tell my mother the future, and she did tell my mom that we were coming to the States, that we were definitely going to America.
And then they came to my neighborhood in Brooklyn.
I didn't want to leave Brazil. I never wanted to leave.
They were a Jewish family, but they were different than the other Jewish people I knew, especially Bessie. I remember the first time I went to their house. I remember the walls that seemed green to me. It was a very small apartment.
I hated it.
And it's bright outside, and there are shadows inside. Curtains are pulled and they're very gray. I don't know whether they came that way or not. And it's bright outside, but there are lots of shadows in the place. Just a stripe of sun shines over the TV set. Little bit shines on the bed. Not very much shines in the kitchen. I mean the sun. There's a lot of shadows there. In the kitchen. Bessie's sitting in the kitchen at the table. And she's always reading that book. She sits with her tea and her book and her pad at the table.
And she's always reading that book.
She smiles at you, Christian Litterator, and I come in. She stands to greet us, and she smiles a toothless grin, and her skin is the rosiest and the whitest and the smoothest all at once. It's a broad face, but her legs are really skinny. It's a broad face, but her legs are like toothpick legs, and she always wears little white anklets with rubber thongs over them. She had bright red hair, bright wiry red hair.
At the table.
And she's always in the kitchen at the table. Well, she works during the day.
At the table.
But when she's home, she's sitting at the table with her candle, her books.
At the table.
Her glass of tea.
Well, you didn't have tea bags in South America. Here you have tea
bags.
At
the table.
And her pad and pencil.
I know she wrote a lot of poetry.
At the table.
She was always alone. Sometimes Ada would scream when she saw a cockroach or something, and Bessie would yell,
"The devil is in you! The devil is in you!"
I think she really felt that way. Yeah, oh yeah. She took me to an exorcist.
Jakob worked 6 months of the year in Peru, but Bessie saved newspapers for him. There were stacks of newspapers, light pink, light green, and slightly yellowed, piled really high in the living room. The living room was their bedroom, too. There was a big bed, a TV set with a remote control, a dresser with a mirror, and stacks of newspapers piled almost to the ceiling, and he read in seven languages.
He did so many things.
He read and 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 he read, and Bessie read too. Was it him? He's the one that, like, turned her on to all that stuff. He believed somehow in the supernatural, but I don't think...
For me, it was normal.
I don't think he believed in Rosicrucian literature, no. He went to shul all the time, and he came home, and he wore those silk scarves with the fringes at the end, and he'd rock in his chair, he'd rock in his seat, and he'd go to shul, and even if they threw eggs at him and called him Christ killer and all that, he went. And Bessie went too to shul. Bessie went with Jakob, never when Jakob wasn't there. It was her, they said it was her duty. And the rest of the time she always sat in the kitchen, I mean after work, I mean she went to work every day, and then I mean she sat in the kitchen and it smelled like sardines and green peas and eggs.
I was after thrill.
The glass at the table and a book at the table and a pencil at the table.
She had a pencil. She had an uncanny insight.
The kitchen seemed green to me, but there was a little bit of sun shining through. Was it a great curtain? Was it really a great curtain? Or was it? I don't know.
We had a metal cupboard in the kitchen. It was very poorly designed.
It was the kind of, I remember the rain, the new sun, and all that.
And Bess is always reading her books.
Rosicrucian literature at the table.
I attended a seance with my mother, and that frightened the hell out of me.
And Bess is always alone at the table. Bess is always alone. Bess is always alone. Bess's husband's gone up here in Peru. And Bessie was brought up being a Jew.
Yeah, it's full of contradictions.
And Bessie doesn't do what other mothers do. And Bessie's always alone.
It did feel that way.
And I wonder what Bessie's thinking when she's not speaking. And I wonder what she's dreaming when she's sleeping. And I want to know what she's reading in that book. I want to know what she's reading in that book. And she's always reading it at the table. And she's always reading it at the table. And she smiles a toothless sleep. When I come to Ada's house, she stands to greet us, and she smiles a toothless grin. And her skin is the rosiest and the whitest and the smoothest all at once. Yes, she's always reading her book. She's always reading Rosicrucian literature at the table. At the table, at the table. At the table, Bessie.
And do you remember when Bessie lost her front teeth? She told me it was during the time when she was pregnant with Philip. It was a very difficult pregnancy, and she nearly died, and Philip nearly died. And she just took him out of the hospital and cared for him. Well, I guess now looking back, I could understand why it was her favorite. She nearly lost him. Oh, God, I was so jealous. I received so much attention constantly. And I loved it.
And she loved me, little
darling. I loved it.
And she loved it.
I loved it.
Loved it.
Loved it.
Loved it.
Loved it.
She loved it.
Suddenly, here's this little baby. It's taking all the attention away from me. I didn't take it very well at all. No. No, 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 no,
Rita called her brother Philip, but Bessie, his mother, called him Fivola. He had freckles on white skin and a pointed chin, and he always wore his satin yarmulke. He shared the one bedroom in their Brooklyn apartment with Ada. There were two beds on metal frames and a metal locker and a dresser in it. Sometimes I would sleep over with Ada in her bed.
It was cozy.
And Fivola's best friend Johnny, who was Chinese and whose father ran the neighborhood Chinese laundry, would sleep over with him.
Very cozy.
They had a little business ripping off coins from payphone booths, and they'd come home at night and count the coins while they should have been sleeping. But Fivola, no matter what he did, was Bessie's little angel.
Okay, between all the attention lavished on my brother in Rosicrucian literature, well, there wasn't that much left for me. I was after thrilled. And my brother was getting involved in petty crime, so to speak. He was working for an Italian man who was involved in the mafia. And my brother was a runner for him, delivering messages. You know? So, it's not exactly a thing for a good Jewish family to get into.
My beloved sir, was Bessie's little angel. Bessie's little angel.
Sometimes he would pray. Well, from what I understand, my father was interested in the supernatural. He believed in it. He always did. I never really grew up in a normal Jewish traditional way. Oh, yes, he did. Yeah, he had Hebrew books, he had the Bible, he had... Going to synagogue already was tension-filled, just, right. You know, you didn't know if you were going to reach there alive or not. I don't know, it didn't seem to bother him as much as it did me. I said to him, why did you bring us here? I always question it, always. I said, I see no point. Why? He would just get upset at me.
He was born in Russia. He was born in Russia.
Lithuania. He was married at a young age, and he had also a son and a daughter. and there was a pogrom, and they killed his family. So after that, he just couldn't stay in the village any longer, and he left. He wasn't able to talk about it too much. It was too painful. He escaped Russia. How, I don't know, but he did. How, I don't know. So he stayed in the artist era in Paris. He was an extremely talented man. In the resistance, the French resistance, the underground, yes. Yeah. They would try and find Hitler and try and kill him, but no one was ever successful. Jacob, my father. It was during one of these raids that, what were these things called that they would throw? Not an arrow. You pull the, I forgot what it's called. Hand grenade. Thank you.
She was making it a moment.
Yeah,
throw an arrow.
On guard.
Right, hand grenade.
And it accidentally went off on his leg. The first time he told me this, I was just horrified. The thought of having to amputate a leg and, you know, without anesthesia, not in a hospital, right then and there.
After the war, Jakob went to South America and started a business.
Schmatte business, factory, clothing factory.
His father went to Canada.
His father ended up in Montreal and lived in a building. And my mom and her mom lived downstairs. And she would bring him chicken soup. His father would say, well, you know, you're a good-looking woman. How come you don't have a husband? And then her mother would probably say to her, well, look, it's time you married. She was almost 30. That time was considered old, 1949. She told Jacob, my father, to come, that he'd have a wife for him. And it was an arrangement between his father and my mother's mother. And that was it.
3 years later, Jakob took his wife Bessie and their baby Ada back to South America.
Uruguay, Paraguay, and then Brazil. Yes, we had to leave Argentina. We were forced to leave. My father worked for the government.
They called him Hakamo.
Multi-talented. He also worked as an interpreter. A lot of Russians would come into Argentina, and he would interpret from Russian to Spanish. There was a coup, and he was considered an enemy of the state. A lot of Jews were also. They were fascists. And when there's a coup, they give you 24 hours to leave the country. That's it.
Jacob.
Whatever you can grab from your house, and you're gone. You have to leave. So we were refugees. We had a big house and a maid. Yeah, and a maid. Wrought iron gates, I remember that. Beautiful, beautiful garden. So I was wealthy for what? 4 years of my life?
Was a coup there, the Peronist government was through there, and Jakob's family too, had to have been there, and to have settled in Argentina.
And then they moved to Brazil. To the jungles of Brazil.
Well, it wasn't far from a jungle. It wasn't like in the Amazon, you know, like right there in the Amazon.
They lived there for 4 years before moving to my neighborhood in Brooklyn. I remember the apartment they had there, and I remember Jakob.
Every time I saw him at home,
and he was only home 6 months out of the year.
In the living room,
very dignified.
Looking very dignified. His books and his papers there
he
were.
He read in seven languages.
Read,
his
wrote.
Rear leg was on the bed, but his other one was at the side of the bed.
Of course, the prosthesis.
Standing by itself at the side of the bed.
He would hop around, you know, go to the washroom. He wanted to be as independent as possible.
He wore a white t-shirt.
Very, very white.
Ribbed with little thin straps.
And sometimes he wore a robe.
And he had lots of little black curly hairs on his chest.
Really curly.
And very big, big blue eyes.
That almost faded into the whites.
He
often watched television.
They had a remote
control.
He
had a remote control for each.
A remote control and a bed in the
living room. Not many families in the neighborhood did.
But they were very different.
But then the Vidges were different in many ways.
And that's why I like them. Their apartment was very small, almost no sun at all.
His hair was slicked back and balding. And when he went outside,
he went to the synagogue.
He wore a suit that was pinstriped.
Elegant.
And he walked with a wooden cane.
A wooden cane.
It was a beautiful cane.
He'd walk to the synagogue.
I never understood why Ada was afraid of him.
He didn't seem like a mean man at all to me.
The first years I knew him,
he was away very often.
He worked half the year in Peru.
6 months in Peru.
But the last 2 years in Brooklyn.
The last 2 years.
He ran the corner candy store.
Behind the counter he worked.
It had been his cousin Harry's before.
And candy bars.
Then one day, my father sat us by the table and he said, "We're going to Israel." That was it. Remember when I told you? I was in shock.
Jacob was 71, Bessie was 51, Ada was 18, and Fivola was 15.
You know the Chabadim? We stayed in a religious village, Kfar Chabad. It's the movement of Chabadim. They originated in Poland. Highly Orthodox community. Oh, yeah. I really don't know why we ended up there, because we really... not Chabadim. We would go to synagogue in the morning.
Every day?
We had to.
Why?
Those were the rules. Yeah.
Because they paid for you.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And then afterwards, my brother and I would conspire to leave.
But your father would go to synagogue too.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was very peaceful. He felt at home. Uh-huh. Very peaceful. And my mother seemed at peace also.
Jacob died when he was 73 years old.
I wasn't there. I left Israel a year and a half later. And I knew my father was ill, but ever since I was young, I felt he was going to die because he was sick. It was very strange. I felt extremely agitated. I was pacing back and forth, back and forth. It was very bizarre. Then I lay down on the couch, and I actually saw his image. And he said to me that he said goodbye, and that it was too late. Immediately, I telephoned my mother, and I said, "Pa died, didn't he?" And she says, "Yes, he died 2 hours ago."
And Bessie?
Her dream was to travel to Egypt, so we did that. I'm glad we did that. 6 months later, my brother telephoned, and he said my mother died. She was rushed to the hospital, and she died overnight. That was a real shock for me. The funeral was a total nightmare. And then I saw these people huddled together sitting on a bench. There were a lot. There were at least 20. So I went over to them, and they told me they were the Rosicrucians, that they loved my mother.
And her brother, Fivola?
He's working in a hotel in Tel Aviv.
And you, Ada?
I'm living in Montreal. I'm back home in a sense, I guess. My job title is Program Animator of Activities for the Elderly.
Ada Vidzer was my best friend.
We would talk, we would philosophize, all through the night. And then we'd fall asleep. And I loved it. It was beautiful.
Nice time, love. Streak straight by my
head on collision!
I am asking you to bring me a toy. I am asking you to bring me a little joy. I straddle.
To tell you the truth. Did you know?
Did you know why I went to the department store the other day?
Hayes! Hazel. Hello, darling. It's the night after. It's the morning begun. It's too soon to know. It's too far to go.
Nothing more. sitting here, listening to the water run, listening to the sounds of the birds singing out there in the sun. Listening to my typewriter, but not even watching the paper it prints on. And in the picture, I you. Sitting in a room, it could be our most anywhere at all. My feet are firmly planted on the ground. Lots of things to see around me. Where are you now?
You know.
Where are you now?
You know.
Who's kissing you
now?
It's okay. It's all right. Lots of light shining in the window, warm my chest. My feet are on the ground, I'm listening to the exhale and the birds and the typewriter, everything up. Of a composition, remove myself from feeling anything at all except what it's like to be part of the picture I've got inside my mind. The room, the sound of love. Sound of a sound of my
heart. I got my fingers on the keys, though I never look to see the words.
Are they words that spill out onto the blank paper? That's right, John Cage says music's supposed to quiet the mind, but it's always bringing me places
of the heart, traces of landscapes where I once was, oh, have never been.
Chicken, 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 I'm Enchantment. Enchantment.
Seeing is that for me? Take it, darling. Take it slow. Take the gray, the silver. Long enough at the shoreline. Going, going back. Once again, it's behind you. Memories are in front and the light, the light, the light. I can't bear a bare light bulb any more than I can bear a rude remark. Manners, darling. The velvet glove on the aisle. Yes, hand it to me on a platter. He brought it to me on a silver platter. And so the cloud, the line, the line, ding, ding, blues, blue. You have it, hard. You ever, ever then tells me that it's.
You have been listening to the far-in, far-out world of Shelley Hirsch. This broadcast is dedicated to Fran. We love you, babe.
The previous program was produced by Clock Tower Radio, clocktower.org, and is broadcast in partnership with Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM.